All right, episode 7 of Frog Fever, a Killer Frogs basketball podcast, Big 12 basketball podcast. This is, I think, episode 7, and my name is Davis Wilson. My co-host is Nick Germani. We're both in different locations. We're both back home, and we've got a good podcast coming your way. This week, we don't have a guest, but we have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. Nick obviously was at the game at Dickies Arena, TCU Arizona State. We'll get into that. And then there was a ton of just Big 12 news generally throughout the league this past week. So Nick, what do you want to get into first?
Yeah, we talked a lot last week about Kansas State and how they're kind of spiraling out of control. Obviously, the Naquan Thomas situation we discussed a lot, and he actually made a decision. He went to Memphis, which is a great get for Memphis. Like, Memphis is already a ranked team on the up and up, and you know Penny can recruit with the best of them. So, that's a nice get for them. He's gonna help them a lot, and just catapult them to where they even want to get farther in the AAC. Mm-hmm. But in terms of looking at K-State, because we are a Big 12 podcast, going back to Tang, which we talked about last week too, and how Tang didn't seem to get the say on how the Naquan Thomas situation went out, which could have ruffled some feathers there, and how he wanted to stay because he is one of the top coaching candidates in college basketball, and he can probably get a lot of jobs that he wants if he wanted to.
Yep.
So they asked him in the presser if he was happy about the situation, if he was happy at Kansas State, and just his general feelings about where he was with his job at this point. And he gave an interesting answer that makes you think.
Yep.
When I believe he said, "It's in God's hands," or whatever, like whatever mm-hmm. I'm told to do by God is where I'm going to go. Basically, mm-hmm. he says he's not, you know, staying at K-State regardless, which is obviously something to be alarming with, because when you have that success instantly and such a strong connection to the fan base and the students there that he has, you would think he would give more of an answer that makes you secure about where he's at job-wise and stuff like that. So when he gives his answer, it makes you think that he's up in the air about what he wants to do. They're having a down season, and mm-hmm. we can talk about their loss to Nebraska too, but from a broad standpoint, if this season does spiral out of control, then I would not be surprised if Tang either takes another job if something opens, or if he talked about like if coaching is even what he wants to do anymore, if he could step in another role. So mm-hmm. that's how I took his comments. I don't know. I'd love to hear your take on it.
Yeah, it was really weird. Just coming off of the year they had last year where, you know, they had all the momentum you could possibly have. Year one head coach with Tang, they go to the Elite Eight. They look really good. They lose some of these big pieces. And now things are kind of, I don't want to say spiraling out of control in Manhattan, but it's not as fun as it was last year, I'm sure, for them. And that answer that he gave, I mean, it was very noncommittal. He was leaving a lot in the air. You know, we're going a lot right now. We're going through college football coaching carousels where, you know, a job will open up and a coach who already has a job at a different school will get asked about that opening and be very vague and, you know, not really shut the door on it. And that's kind of what Tang did. He basically said, "I'll be here for as long as God wants me to be here, and then I'll move on." So, which, you know, whatever, that's fine, but it's not something I would guess you'd want to hear as a Kansas State fan. And then, yeah, to add on top of all this, they lost to Nebraska, which is kind of a regional, a semi-regional rivalry, I guess. They're kind of, you know, Midwestern area, but I don't know. The last two pods we've had, Kansas State has been the entertainment, whether it's these crazy games or whether it's this off the court kind of drama. And they're doing it again. We said, I think it was 3 weeks ago, we said Kansas State may not be the best team in the Big 12, but they may be one of the most entertaining, and they're holding us to that right now.
Yeah. you know, when they lost to Nebraska at home. Nebraska's not a bad team, but at home you should have probably beat them. And you got, you know, Nebraska's coach Fred Hoiberg doing the lowdown dance in the locker room, mock and tang after the game. It's not going well over there. But going back to his presser comments, when you are a head coach of a team, I think you want to definitely be strongly worded and obvious in what you're trying to say. So I think it's very obvious that if you did want to stay at Kansas State, he would just give a definite, I am staying here. Like I remember, for an example, when the A&M job was open in football and Dan Lanning was asked about it, the coach of Oregon, he was very certain, like, I am staying at Oregon. And that's what he ended up doing. So you want to be very straightforward so the speculation doesn't get in your head in terms of a distraction from games and stuff like that. It's very alarming that he said that. Again, I would say I wouldn't be surprised what he does, because he had such a strong success last year that he seems like he has his pick of a lot of different options. So I think the way this season goes for K-State is will be very indicative of what he does, because they could have success, like we've said, but they've lost three games already this season, and they're not, you know, a top tier team in the Big 12. I would say they're mid right now to lower, because they just haven't gotten that many signature wins on the year, and they've been so close to really failure by having all these success and overtime wins that it could look a lot worse than it does right now. But depending on how they do the in conference play, this could either, you know, be fine because they do have a lot of talent on this team, or we could see it spiraling out of control where they start blowing games that they shouldn't, and then it really looks at Tang's job as what is he going to do? Is he going to move on, or is he going to stay?
Yeah, and that's weird because this time last year, I mean, Kansas State basketball was, you know, it was one of the more exciting programs in the country, I'd say.
Sure.
And now they're just, I don't know. I thought it was a weird thing to say, and maybe that, you know, it seemed like he was such a Kansas State guy when he got there. He embraced all this stuff. He, you know, was all into all the rivalry stuff with Kansas. He and his players seem to have a really good relationship. And now, I mean, he just seemed to embody Kansas State really well. And now he's, you know, not really seeming very committed. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe we're wrong about this. Maybe we're misreading what he said, but it did not seem very committed to me. And I think that is something to watch. And then, yeah, they lose to Nebraska, who, you know, actually really isn't a bad team. They have a good coach. And that's their third loss of the year. Like you said, they've lost to USC, Miami, and Nebraska now. And their best win is against Villanova in overtime. They beat Providence in overtime. And other than that, though, it's really a bunch of, I don't know, a bunch of meh wins for me. And maybe even some bad wins, like the one against North Alabama, where they win by 1 point in overtime. I think there's cause for concern for Kansas State, but again, I think it's semi early and they have time to figure some of that stuff out.
Yeah, for sure. And it is to be said that Tang has been a character and kind of an odd guy in his tenure there. So taking what he says may not be like as straightforward as another coach who would be normal, because Tang is a character, and that's why I think people are drawn to him so much, because he has this unique personality. So I'm just excited to see how the K-State season unfolds, because that's going to be so telling of what's going to happen.
And then the last thing on Kansas State before I move on, just more specifically on the Nebraska game, like their guys just didn't, I mean, no one really played well for them, which
Yeah,
is the concerning
they
part
couldn't
for
hit a
me.
shot.
Like you have guys on Nebraska, what's his name? Rank Mast, I think is his name. He played well. He was the best player on the court. And then like your guys on Kansas State, where you're hoping they're the best guys on the court, like Kaluma and Tyler Perry, both really had terrible games. Kaluma was 2 of 10 from the field, 0 of 5 from 3 with 8 points and 5 rebounds. And Tyler Perry was 3 of 11 from the field, 3 of 10 from 3 with 11 points and 6 assists. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm shocked to see it look this
Yeah.
bad. And was this a home game?
Yeah, it was at
Yeah,
K-State.
that's, I don't know.
I think too.
Nebraska's not bad, but this is a little alarming to me, I would think.
Yeah, I think the K-State's offense is just bad, to be
Yeah.
honest. Like they
Yeah.
haven't showed up consistently at all this year, and especially the last four games. Like they put up 75 in overtime, 72 in overtime, 75, 62, or I mean 46, which is insanely
Yeah.
bad. And they're
Yeah.
the via KenPom, they're the 105th ranked offense of all the teams in the nation. So that's not good if you're a Big 12 team and want to compete. And
Yeah.
I think it's been telling of why they've been taking so many losses. Like their defense isn't bad at all. They've played hard. I don't think effort's the issue, but I mean they just can't hit shots at this point. So
Yeah.
it's worrisome for sure if you're a K-State fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And yeah, Tyler Perry is, it seems like he's still figuring things out. He's coming from UNT where they played at a really slow pace and they were really effective with that slow pace, but it's a different offense he's in now. It's kind of a, it seems like they're trying to go faster than he is used to. And, you know, I don't know, he's not shooting the ball very efficiently. And I think that if their season is going to take a turn in a good direction, it'll be because Tyler Perry starts to kind of get more consistent in his shot selection and shot making.
For sure.
All right. Next up, let's talk about West Virginia. They also had a bit of an eventful week. They got some good news, and then immediately after that good news, they lose to UMass. Do you want to talk about the good news first?
Yeah, sure. So, Raekwon Battle and Noah Farrakhan are two of their transfers that were awaiting waivers to be eligible for the season. Specifically, Raekwon Battle, who's one of the top transfers in the country, and they finally got their waived to be eligible. I believe Farrakhan played and Battle actually didn't this game, but they both should be suited up soon. And then they got Kirk Risebeck, who was suspended, as we all know. And you think this would be their kind of last hurrah to, you know, to bounce back in their season because they've been so bad this year, and we've kind of written them off a long time ago. But and then they go play at UMass, and Kirk Risa actually plays really good. I believe he hit six threes, and he just kept kind of firing. He was one of their best players in the offense, but they lost to UMass, a team that they should beat, which is kind of alarming that. The fact that they're just not going to be good this year. They also lost Jesse Edwards, who was arguably their best player at the center position for at least 4 weeks, I believe. So this is probably one of the last times we're going to really talk about West Virginia because I think that it's official that they're just going to be bad and injuries and, you know, they don't really have a real coach right now. So I just wanted to give that note that they got their guys back and they're still not good, and they probably won't have a lot of success in the Big 12.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Raekwon Battle. I think I saw that he's sick, but he is expected to play. I think they play tomorrow at
Yeah.
against Rad. They host Radford tomorrow, and I mean, it's hard to write a team off this early, but they're 132nd in KenPom, and they lost to UMass team who's actually now better than them in KenPom. They're 129, so I am excited to see Raekwon Battle. He was a really great scorer at Montana State, I believe is where he was,
Yeah.
and a marquee transfer for them. And he, you know, who knows? He may help this team out a lot, but I mean, it seems like they have a lot of work to do, and it may be beyond what one player can do. We'll see. But
Yeah, they just don't have a signature win at all this year. Their
yeah.
best win is against Missouri State, and they haven't beat any relatively good team. I think they're 4-6 at this point, and Big 12 schedule is right around the corner, so I don't see them having much success there. So I just wanted to say that we'll be looking out for Carissa and Battle and all these guys who came back, but I don't think it's really anything to be noteful of unless they have a big upset or something coming up soon.
What's next? Do you wanna Cincinnati? Yeah, we'll go to Cincinnati. They lost to Dayton. Dayton's not a bad team. What were your kind of thoughts on this game? And, you know, Cincinnati was one of those teams that got off to a really, really fast start. And now they dropped this game to Dayton. I don't know. I think they're home, right? I think they're home.
I believe it was,
it
like
neutral?
A neutral site.
Like a semi-home?
Semi-home, yeah. But
yeah,
they're both in Ohio, so it was like a fun.
This was in Cincinnati, so maybe it was similar to kind of the TCU Arizona State game where it was in Fort Worth, but not a home game. I don't know.
Definitely.
But, these teams are semi-evenly ranked in KenPom, I believe. I don't know. I'm excited to see what Cincinnati does. This was a test for them, and they didn't look great. What do you think?
Yeah, this was another test to see where they're at, because they were similar to TCU, where they were that 7-0 team that hadn't really played anybody. And the two teams they've played that are actually good, in Xavier and Dayton, they haven't passed the test so far. They even looked worse against Dayton. They lost by 14, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows that, you know, we got excited for Cincinnati at the beginning of the year, and they had such a strong start at the beginning. We were getting to see where they were at, and they kind of showed where they're at now, which is probably around a TCU tier, maybe worse, maybe better, but, like, you know, they're going to be fighting in the middle pack of that team. Their best win is against Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech's, you know, not a great team. So until they have a big win or a big loss, I think we kind of stay with Cincinnati at that mid tier, but they can definitely upset a team. They just don't have a lot of star power, I think.
Yeah.
Like, they have guys like Victor Lakin, Day Day Thomas, you know, Dan Skillings, who Chisel James is a fun freshman, but I'm waiting to see them emerge to really pass one of these big tests. You know, again, very similar to TCU, where we lost to Clemson, who's probably better than us, and then we beat Arizona State, who's good but worse than us. So I'm just kind of waiting out the process on Cincinnati, and I thought that this would be a good opportunity for them to make a statement win, but, you know, they didn't pass the test, so I don't think they're anything too scary.
Yeah. And yeah, you mentioned how they're kind of a mid-tier team in the Big 12. They're still 37th in KenPom, which we've kind of talked about this for the last couple of weeks. A mid-tier team in the Big 12 is going to probably be good enough to get you in the tournament, which is why I'm still kind of watching Cincinnati, because they have surprised. I mean, they've surprised me personally. I didn't expect them to. I don't know. I mean, we're gonna see a lot more. We're gonna figure out a lot more about them when they start Big 12 play. But you're right. The only two teams they've played, two teams that are top 50 teams in KenPom. The rest have been 100 or above. And the two teams that were top 50, they lost to. So the only two tests on the year that they have were losses. So that's concerning. They have Merrimack and Stetson and Evansville next, all at home, all should be wins. And then it gets fun. They get to go to BYU, which is going to be their biggest test of the year. BYU is still surging somehow. They're fifth in KenPom. That's going to be a great game. And then they get Texas, they get Baylor, and they get TCU. And, you know, even after that, it just doesn't get any easier. So I'm excited to see them play in the Big 12. I think it's a little bit scary that they lost both of their two tests, you know, kind of the games where they should be competitive or win, or at least be competitive in, and they lost both of them. So
yeah, we'll they see. Haven't been a team Big 12 caliber so far. Right. So until they do that, I wouldn't give them too much consideration of being good.
Yeah. Let's see here. Technically, they beat Illinois Chicago, who is only one spot below West Virginia in KenPom. So
Georgia Tech's probably better than West Virginia, I would say, too. So maybe that's not exactly true.
Oh,
but
Georgia Tech is above them, 127.
Yeah. So the majority Big 12 teams minus West Virginia.
West Virginia,
and West Virginia
count.
Is a mess. So I don't know if we really count that.
Who else is a mess? Baylor looked like a bit of a mess this weekend. They
did.
Got completely blown out by a Michigan State team that had been struggling. Like they were, what were they, top five preseason AP poll team?
Yeah, I think
And
there are four.
yeah, they're four. And Baylor, is that Baylor's first? That's Baylor's first loss of the year, and
Yeah.
it was not pretty at all.
Yeah, they got boat raced.
Yeah.
And I kind of, it's interesting to say because Michigan State needed that win and Baylor's been good, but man, Baylor, that Baylor defense, I mean, they are, I think they're just soft.
Yeah.
If we look at Baylor teams that have had success, they obviously had that 2021 team, which didn't count. So, but ever that team was built on defense and, defense and grit and toughness, and they had big men and Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler and all these tough guys. And if that season had counted, they would have won a national championship, but that sucks that it didn't. But ever since then, they've had these soft teams built on guard play and no defense. And that defense is bad. I mean, Michigan State, they beat Auburn week one in that fun
It's
game
a great
when
game.
yeah. It but ever since then they really haven't played anybody tough, and Michigan State was that first really tough game that they played since then, and they just completely blew it. And I think it just goes to the fact that when you're in the Big 12, you have to have strong defense. All they have is guards that can score. So you're gonna have to, when a team can run fast and meet you at that offensive end, then I mean, they're gonna struggle. I don't know. What are your takeaways?
Yeah, well, Michigan State is now 5-5. They have been struggling on the year. We all knew, I mean, I think you and me knew that they were still a good team, but that's not a good loss. And to your point on Baylor's defense, they're 69th in adjusted defense on KenPom. So, going based on that, they're not a top 64 team defensively, which, is going to cause them problems in the Big 12 if they don't get that figured out. And then and really, it was none of their guys really were great. And it's weird because they didn't shoot the ball all that terribly. They were 48% from the field, 31.5% from three. But they just, I don't know. Michigan State just killed them. Like it was really not a close game ever. And at one point, wasn't it like 45-15 or something? Is that right?
Yeah, I mean,
It's
it
just
was over from the
ridiculous.
start.
It's just a really, really bad showing for Baylor. And to I mean, this was this another kind of semi away game? What was this? Or
Yeah,
was
it was
this
semi away.
semi away? So I don't know, like
I think it was
Michigan
in
State's really
Detroit.
good. I think that there's no they got off to a bad start, but Michigan State is a good team that has had some tough losses. And if you're a Michigan State fan, that's exactly the type of win that you need to kind of get it going again. And they're, I mean, Michigan State's on their way, I think, and now Baylor may have some question marks. I mean, you mentioned that Auburn game with Baylor where Jacoby Walter kind of went off and
Yeah.
he did not really have a great game. And I think when you have these guards, especially these freshman guards, you don't want to depend on him, but you kind of have to. He's a really talented scorer. He's a great player, but when you're kind of just waiting on him to have one of those big games, I don't think that's the recipe for success. But I don't know. I don't know. This was just a terrible game. I don't know whether to overreact or not, but it's definitely cause for concern, especially as, we're like 3 weeks away from conference play or three games away. So it's coming up and they're gonna have to get that figured out.
Yeah, I look into this a little bit and take some because they're one of the best offensive teams in the nation, and they have sick guard play. Like, you can go up and down and forwards. Like, Jacoby Walter, Ray J. Dennis, Jaden Nunn, Langston Love, Jalen Bridges at the forward. They live on this fun guard play, and they play pretty brand of basketball where they can score. They all of them have deep bags where they can – they got handles, they can shoot, all this type of stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, they show that Michigan State that they're going to be a pretty team, but they're going to be like a soft-ass team when it gets down to it, and they can get exploited when you play a tough team that keeps you in the half court. And when you look at this Big 12, I think the top of the conference is a little shaky. I would be interested to see, do you think Baylor is a top three team at this point in the Big 12?
That's a good question. Let me see. Well, Baylor has a top five, I think it was a top five offense. They have the fourth adjusted offense efficiency. So you're right, they can score. But right now, I think my top three in the Big 12 is Houston, Kansas, and I mean, is it BYU?
I would throw BYU. Is it BYU. Oklahoma is the seventh ranked team in the nation too, and they're still undefeated, so I would give them a little credit. But
I think, I mean, I don't know if they're a top three. It's not definitive like it was probably a week ago. Like a week ago, I'd say Houston, Kansas, Baylor. Now it's probably Houston, Kansas, I guess BYU, which is pretty funny. But I mean, maybe Oklahoma. They're undefeated still, and they have some amazing wins. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe they're a top – maybe they're the fifth best team. I don't know. But,
I don't know. Iowa State's up there too, and then TCU, and we only have one loss. I don't know. It's so fun to look at the top of the conference because I would probably say at this point in the year, Houston is the best team out of all the top teams. Like, you know, Purdue, you can make the argument for UConn, Kansas. But I think that Houston's the only team that hasn't gotten a loss of the top tier teams. They just beat a good A&M team. So they'd have to be probably number one in the conference right now. And I would say Kansas is too, because they have the signature wins. And then I would put BYU up there too, because they passed so many tests. But it's interesting because if you have such a signature loss like this, if you're Baylor, then you're going to have to regroup fast, because to compete at the top, like, you can't be losing by 30 or whatever they lost to. And I know Michigan State's a good team, but it's interesting. And they have a quick turnaround. This pod will probably be out maybe by the time this game finishes, but we're recording on Tuesday. Do you want to preview Baylor Duke? And
yeah,
because that's a big game.
Quick,
that's and I guess if you game. Say it's something look ahead game, if you have Michigan State on a Saturday, who they have struggled, they're still Michigan State, but if you were to look ahead to going to playing Duke, then that would be a look ahead if you want to look at that way. But who do you think is going to take this Baylor Duke game? Because Duke's been kind of frauds too, so
yeah,
it's like a fraud game here.
Yeah, this is a really, really tough back to back for Baylor. Neither of these games are home games. This is a neutral game with Duke, and I don't know. It's tough. I think that Baylor needs this game. I mean, they don't need it by any means, but it would be nice to respond after a loss like that. And I think that, I don't know, it's hard because they're so reliant on their guards and their offense. I guess if I had to make a prediction, I'd say Baylor. I think Baylor can respond, and I think they kind of are going to want to respond because they were terrible. They were just so bad against Michigan State, and I'm sure they're going to want to get that taste out of their mouth immediately, as soon as possible. And doing it against a top 15 team in Duke is the way to do it. The best possible way you can forget about Michigan State.
Yeah, this game's gonna be so hype. It's at MSG, I believe.
That's awesome.
Which is, you know, as big time as it gets.
Yeah,
I struggle with this game too. I think it's gonna be super close because both teams have showed insane talent, and both teams have showed weaknesses in their teams. I might give like a slight edge to Duke because if they have Filipowski, and Baylor's best big man probably is Misi, and he's just so inexperienced at this point, and you know, loner's not great either. You know, everyday John, Chacha, or whatever you how you pronounce it. Because of that, and Duke's got great guard play too that can probably compete with Baylor a little bit. I might give the slight edge there, but I'm gonna be super interested to see, because whoever loses this game is gonna be called frauds, and whoever wins it is gonna be almost crowned by being having a signature win and, you know, being better than two of the top programs in college basketball. So, I'm looking super forward to this game. Another game that's big tomorrow, if you want to preview that, is Oklahoma gets their first like massive big time test, because they're one of the only four undefeated teams in college basketball, and they play North Carolina on neutral site. So, what do you think about that one?
Yeah, this is the one I'm actually more excited for because I think Oklahoma might be for real. They now have wins. We talk about this every week, but they have good wins over Iowa, USC, Providence, Arkansas. And none of those are like top 20 wins, but those are all around that 50 KenPom range of wins, which is, you know, they're kind of stacking them. And now you get North Carolina, a semi away game. North Carolina is 20th in KenPom. And I think I'm going to ride the Big 12 across the board tomorrow. I think I'm going to go with Oklahoma because I just love the way that they're put together. They're kind of this team similar to like a TCU where they're kind of all it's a bunch of kind of loose parts put together, and it's working really well for Porter Moser, who's a great coach and who has won a lot of big games. So yeah, I'm gonna go with the Sooners, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think Oklahoma is legit because they passed so many tests up to this point. I might have to fade a little bit. I think it's gonna be super close, but the fact that it's in Charlotte and North Carolina's coming off a couple losses, like to Kentucky and UConn, that we've seen recently, I think they need this win more than Oklahoma. And just being at home, they're gonna be super fired up, because Oklahoma, at this point, being one of the four undefeated teams of college basketball, has this target on their back where they're not gonna be slept on anymore. I think Oklahoma is gonna have lots of success in the Big 12, but they got to take a loss at some point, right? So I would probably say North Carolina edges it out slightly. But I mean, two insane tests. And if you are Oklahoma, I believe they're seventh ranked in the nation right now. If you're Oklahoma and you just beat North Carolina, I mean, you are legit, legit. You know what I mean? Like, if they do pull, I don't know what the, I would be interested to see what the spread is, but
I'll look right now. See.
yeah. That game's gonna be fun.
All right. The spread. Oh, it's not on there. Give me 1 second for the spread. Yeah, I mean that's a
It's a
I
pretty
just
evenly matched game.
yeah, it is. It's interesting because I think Oklahoma is, I mean, for me at least, they've surprised me. And I didn't really
For
know what to
sure.
expect again expect in terms of what kind of team they were, but they have it's one of those situations in the transfer portal era where you bring a bunch of transfers and it can go one of two ways. You know, these transfers cannot work out, and they can, you know, when you bring all these new guys in, sometimes it doesn't work, and then sometimes it will work. And so far it's working for Oklahoma, and this is undoubtedly their biggest test. So I'm excited to see what happens for sure.
Yeah. I mean, these two games that we just talked about are the two biggest games in college basketball this week, I would say. So it's going to be super interesting to see where the Big 12 lies going against the two best teams of the ACC, probably. And just to see where exactly the litmus test for how good this conference is. Because if Oklahoma can go beat North Carolina, I mean, that just shows just how deep the Big 12 is compared to the ACC's top tier and blue bloods.
I got the spread here. It's UNC -2. So Oklahoma is a underdog, a 2-point underdog.
Yeah, that's about what I would say, to be honest, because North Carolina just seems like a bit of a more proven team and they need this win more. But God, if they win that,
Yeah.
This ceiling is the roof.
Baylor is it looks like Baylor may be a 1-point underdog against Duke, I think. So
yeah.
two
Two
very good
basic coin
games.
flips.
Yeah,
Yeah.
really, really excited to watch those two.
Super excited, yeah.
And they both, you know, both could go either way, and both, like you said, are huge tests for the Big 12, just to see how deep they really are.
For sure.
All right, you want to take a quick break and come back and talk TCU's big win?
Yeah.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk TCU basketball. TCU beat Arizona State at Dickies Arena in Fort Worth on Saturday night, late Saturday night.
Yeah.
You were there.
Super late.
This was the biggest game. This was the biggest game of them for the year. Or I guess the Clemson game was bigger, but this is the biggest win
Definitely.
that they have so far. And just to start, I was concerned right off the bat. This looked like
yeah.
we called this game, you called this game a can't lose when we did our
Yeah.
pod last week. And right off the bat, it looked like TCU was going to get smoked. And they ended up turning it around. But what was there something that, you know, I was watching, but it's sometimes about you get a better feeling when you're there. Was there something that happened that turned it around? Was there a moment that shifted the momentum, or what did you make of the really sudden kind of eruption from TCU?
Yeah, as you said, you know, we got off to such a slow start, and it was funny because Adam Miller was kind of the guy hitting everything for
Yeah,
Arizona State, and he was this close to coming to TCU last year. We were in the final two with him, them and LSU. Adam Miller's been around the block. I mean, in
he's
3 years, he went from Illinois to LSU to now Arizona State. And they were just hitting everything, and we couldn't hit anything. And it was the story of TCU with the slow starts, like we saw in a lot of the non-conference games where we didn't play anybody. And it showed up here for the first time, really, when it mattered. But I would say the turning point happened, or at least I like to think it happened because it's fun, is when Arizona State had back-to-back technicals when it was about a tie game in early in the second half, I believe. Where they got a bench tech for stepping out of the court, I think. And then Bobby Hurley got mad at it, so he got a tech. And ever since then, I think we went on a 42-21 run, and we won by 20. So, I mean, that's what it is right there. Things momentum switched so fast. Like, we started hitting threes, and you know, we started getting in the flow of the offense, stopping him more. I mean, our defense was stout in that second half. We won that second half 53-29, I believe, which is insane to win a half by in college basketball. But the story of this game, I think we can all agree, is Micah Peavy, Big 12 Player of the Week, having the first triple-double in his career, the 10th triple-double in all of college basketball this year, and the third triple-double ever in TCU history. He joined Kurt Thomas and Kendrick Williams, who are both NBA guys. So, yeah. A huge win for TCU. They needed this one. As you said, it was a can't lose. And I was a little worried at the beginning, but I think something clicked where we knew we had to run, and we knew, you know, we can feed these guys more. And we kind of played together, which I think was the most in an important game this year that we've done that, where it was everybody can, like, E-Man had 18, Mike obviously with the triple-double, Jameer, I thought Uday played his best game he's
Yeah,
played
for
so
sure.
far.
Absolutely.
Jacoby had an off night, but everybody picked him up to the point where it didn't even really matter. And it just showed, I think, for the first time, the real potential this team has. And to beat a top 100 KenPom team is extremely impressive. So, yeah, those are my takeaways, at least. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. So if I'm doing this math right, with 10 minutes and 1 second left in the first half, Arizona State's Kamari Lands hit a free throw to make it 23-9. And from that point on, TCU went on a 70-36 run to close the game, which is just complete dominance, a complete turnaround from what it looked like the game was going to be. Like, it was just, Adam Miller, how many did he have, like 10 points, like almost immediately?
Yeah, I think he had like 15 almost immediately. That was crazy.
Yeah, you couldn't
stop. I quote tweeted him his decision, and I was like,
I saw that.
God, what would have happened? But I mean, it ended up being
man.
fine.
I mean, Micah Peavy obviously was awesome. I was scared Jamie was gonna, I mean, PV was out of the game with like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I was a little worried that Jamie was gonna not put him in, but he did, and he got the assists, the final assist he needed. So he ended up with 13, 12, and 10, and two steals as well. I thought Jameer played well. We keep talking about him, kind of waiting for him to take a step,
Yeah.
scoring wise. He still hasn't really done that, but he was fine. He had 11 points, 4 of 7 from the field, 3 of 4 from three, and then, two steals, which seems like he does that every game.
Yeah. Great bounce back game because he didn't play that great. He didn't play good at all last week. So
Yeah, he
that
was
was great to
terrible.
see from him.
Yeah. Just moving down the starting lineup, Uday, you mentioned, I completely agreed with your take on this being his best game. He played 18 minutes, and I don't know, he scored 8 points, he had 5 rebounds, 2 steals. It felt like he was everywhere. It felt like he had four just massive dunks, which are just always so fun
Yeah.
when a big guy, like those Shaquille O'Neal dunks where he just tries to rip the rim off. I felt like he had like three or four of those. And then Emmanuel Miller continues to prove that he's this team's leader.
Yeah.
He had 18 points, 6 rebounds, 3 steals. Just another really nice team effort. And then your bench was good as well. Like Avery Anderson, 6 points. Trey Tennyson, probably the best game of his season. He had eight
Yeah,
points
he hit some
on,
big shots.
a couple big shots. O'Bannon had 7 rebounds and 2 blocks. Mustafa played 12 minutes, 6 points. And Cork only played 8 minutes and recorded 2 points. But a really even spread of production for TCU, I think. And that was a huge win for them, especially the way it started coming back like that and completely dominating. I mean, it really wasn't even as close as a 20-point game, I think. Like
Yeah.
they were so far, so clearly the better team. And, if it wasn't for that quick start for Arizona State, it would have been much worse. But TCU responded really well and just really destroyed Arizona State in the last, I guess, 30 minutes of the game. So.
It's so awesome to see PV developing because 2 years ago, he was just a defensive guy and had no offensive game at all, pretty much, other than a few finishes. But the fact that Micah Peavy had 10 assists and 11 rebounds, two career highs, he was doing everything for him. I mean, he was driving, making the right pass. He was playing smart. He was playing under control. And he's perfect because he's so athletic to be able to push the ball. And if he has this control continuously for this team, it can be such a big boost for them if he's efficient on the offensive end, even relatively close to what this is. But I kind of want to look into the Uday thing a little more because this was the first time, really, and it was against a real opponent, too. So this is the first time where we've seen separation from the big man where they haven't played equal minutes for the most part. Like Uday played 18 and Mustafa played 11 and Corey played 8. So, I mean, that's showing, I think, what we've all wanted to see is that high ceiling of Uday that he can be one of the top players on this team. He was extremely efficient. He was under control. He was a better finishing than he's been all year. And to have that big man, like you said, being a consistent force for them, because when you have the same guy, you can kind of get the chemistry working. You can get the lobs. He's so athletic that he can bring so much to this team that it's such a big boost for them. And I would like to see those minutes kind of stay the same because Uday does have a higher ceiling than the other guys. Another take I wanted to bring to the table was they had 24 assists on 30 something field goals, 31 field goals, I believe.
31,
And this has been a trend for them this year. They're fourth in the nation in assist as a team with 21, which is, for reference, they had 16 a game last year. I mean, that is extremely big when you can get out in the transition game and you can move the ball. And in the half court too, even especially because you don't have these breakaway games, like you can be able to work the ball around, pass it a lot, and just be able to get all these guys involved. That was huge for me this game because the half court was atrocious against Clemson. So to be able to have such a big boost, I think, from there, like Micah did such a good job there too. And just being able to work in the half court because you're not going to get in transition every single time like you want. So the execution there was a big plus. And I was super pleased with this effort because Arizona State is not bad. And they're coming off a loss that, so they were, I mean, they came out hot and it was tough, but very, very fun game. Very fun with the Bobby Hurley, tech. And I don't know. It was a great showing from TCU and super encouraging because you didn't know what they were going to bring after the Clemson game.
Yeah. The assist numbers, like you mentioned, were really encouraging. And like you said, kind of becoming a trend, also becoming a trend. And we may have already known this about this team, but they forced 19 Arizona State turnovers, which is a lot. That's compared to TCU's 13 turnovers. TCU has the 23rd best adjusted defense, according to KenPom. They have the 6th best turnover percentage defensively. And it's kind of the flip side. We were just talking about Baylor, how Baylor needs to have a better defense. TCU seems to have this pretty exciting defense. I mean, let's see. They have the 4th best steal percentage in the country. Like, they're fun. They're fast. And I think that kind of thing contributes to the assist numbers. You force turnovers.
Definitely.
And you push the floor like Jamie loves to do. And you get these assists. And honestly, if you can do that and you can – I mean, the half court was better against Arizona State, but it was so bad against Clemson that if you can just work on, if you can get in transition for a majority of the game, and I don't want to say eliminate the half court offense because you need to have a half court offense, but TCU obviously excels when they're going fast, and this combination of their steals, their quick hands, their rebounding, their assist numbers are all indicators to me of a team that is just going to kill you in transition. And
yeah, it's extremely obvious that that's the backbone of what they're trying to do. And so if you can force 19 turnovers, like you said, I mean, this team's pretty much unbeatable because they're arguably, one of the best fast break teams in the nation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you play this tempo, you get those turnovers and you can get out and transition faster. I mean, that's exactly what they're trying to do. So it's not going to be there every game. So you're going to have to improve on the half court, like we saw in Clemson. But if you can do that, I mean, that's plan A for what you're trying to do. So that was very good to see, as you said.
I have one more note on Micah Peavy. Before we move on, he had such a good game. One of the more fun games I've seen, one of the more complete games I've seen from any TCU player in the last couple of years. It did remind me of some of those Kenny Hustle games years ago. But months ago when I was in Kansas City for the Big 12 Media Day, I talked to Jamie about like what the guard situation was going to look like. How are you going to replace Damian Baugh and Mike Miles? These two, one of the best guard tandems in the country. And he talked about the transfers. He talked about Jameer. He talked about Avery Anderson. But the guy he talked about the most probably was Micah Peavy. He was assuring us that Micah Peavy was a big guard. That was the role he played in high school. He had the ball in his hands at Duncanville when he played there. And it's so cool to see that come to fruition this year. Like, he was a guard. He was the best guard for TCU against Arizona State. He was spreading the ball around. And then you add the size piece. Like, he's a big guard, so he can score. He can score inside. He's a good finisher, and he's going to grab rebounds. So I don't know. This may be an interesting take, but I wouldn't be surprised if this not the last triple double we see from him this year. And I know that triple doubles these days with guys like Luka and Jokic in the NBA, I feel like it's made triple doubles seem more, I guess, more normalized and not as big of a deal. But in college, it is still a really
massive.
Cool thing. It's a massive deal in college, and I think that Micah is the guy on this team that has the potential to turn in maybe one or two more of them. I don't know if that's crazy, but he looked the best he's looked all year. He was doing everything, and it was super cool to see him really play the role he played at Duncanville in high school.
No, I completely agree. When Jamie put out that first starting lineup of the season, and we've gone with this big set. I didn't expect us to do that because we've gone with two point guards pretty much with DB and Mike the past couple of years. So you think you'd want to keep that going and you'd play like an Avery Anderson or a smaller guard like that. But the fact that he had so much confidence in Mike, it gave me assurance that he has the potential to do this kind of thing. And as we've gone along in the season, we've seen more of this big guard stuff that we haven't seen in the past, where he's been more of a small forward or just, that bigger forward presence. So the fact that he can be a guard and has gotten this comfortable to be able to put out 10 assists is insane. I mean, he's been as impressive as anybody this season, I think, and has been one of the most consistent players. Because regardless of his offensive game, he's gonna give you one of the best defensive efforts in the country, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so if he even gives you a little bit, you'd be pleased. But I mean, a triple double is insane. And he's Big 12 Player of the Week. He's become one of the best players in this conference, and I think top two player on this team, where you can count on him
Certainly.
every single night.
Certainly, yeah. Yeah, that was a big win. Just to wrap it up, put a bow on it. That was a massive win. And it's one thing to win these big games. It's another thing to look like they looked, especially after the first 10 minutes where they looked terrible. The last 30 minutes, they looked like one of the best teams in the conference. And Arizona State's a top 100 team. They're not going to be anywhere really near what you're going to see in the Big 12, but it's
Yeah.
encouraging to see them have a win like that because previously their best win was Georgetown, who's 178th in KenPom. So this is what, 74 spots better, a 74 spot better win with Arizona State. So
Yeah.
a great win, and looking forward, if you don't have anything else on this game,
Yeah, I mean, just a statement win and to
yeah.
show that you're that much better than a team of Arizona State's caliber is huge, especially for if you're because TCU might be a bubble team going on. So, having this type of statement win is huge.
And it's a rematch in a of a really great game in the tournament last year,
Definitely.
a game also TCU also won. So, but looking ahead, TCU is playing in the Diamond Head Classic starting Thursday, I believe, against Old Dominion. Is that right?
Yeah, we play Old Dominion Thursday.
So if you just want to, we can kind of preview this tournament. There's some very solid teams in this tournament. Nevada is,
They're good. They're nine and one.
if TCU wins their game against Old Dominion and Nevada wins their game against Temple, I think that will be the matchup. TCU will get Nevada, who's the 49th best team in KenPom. And then who else is good in this field? Old Dominion is not good.
No.
They're
Georgia
230th.
Tech's okay.
Yeah, Georgia Tech.
UMass we saw beat
Yeah, UMass just beat,
West Virginia.
Big 12 team. Temple's 160, so they're all right. And I think Hawaii is decent this year. They're 114th. So there's some good
Yeah.
teams. You can see some kind of resume teams, resume building teams. But obviously TCU has to take care of business against Old Dominion. But what are you looking for in this tournament? Is this a tournament, I mean, you expect to win? Or what do
Yeah,
you want to see?
yeah, TCU is the best team in this tournament. There are some good teams, but I mean, when you look at the statement, like TCU should not lose to any of these teams if you do want to be a tournament team. We've seen in bracketologies recently, TCU is on the bubble, so this is massive for what they want to do. And if you can win this tournament, I think it gives you a big bump in confidence and resume going into Big 12 play. We start off at Old Dominion Thursday in Hawaii, obviously. Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be a huge first step. That's another, solid win, probably better than most that you've had so far this year, that you should be able to take handily. And if you do get that Nevada game, I mean, that would be your best win of the year. Obviously, looking ahead, and we don't know, maybe Temple could beat him. Maybe we just blow it against Old Dominion. But I think it's a huge opportunity for TCU to build that resume because we've played such a weak non-conference that if you get maybe winning against Nevada, maybe winning against Georgia Tech or UMass, then you can really see take that step above other bubble teams where, hey, we have, multiple wins non-conference that we can hang our hat on and be proud of, go looking on the resume. And this is probably the biggest test of the year, playing consecutive games with so many decent teams, that it's going to be massive for them. Again, not the best slate of teams, but definitely teams that improve your resume.
Yeah, I would really love to see them get a win against Old Dominion, which they should do. And then I would love to see a game against Nevada, because Nevada is a legit team. They would easily be the best team, or it'd be a potentially best win. They're better than Arizona State. They're not as good as Clemson, but they're a really good team. And I would love to see a matchup where TCU, goes in there and wins, or goes in there and gets an opportunity to play against Nevada. I think that would be really cool. But there are other, a Georgia Tech, you'd see them in the finals. Georgia Tech, UMass, Hawaii, one of those teams you'd probably see in the finals. That's another decent win. Like, I think right now it's all about stacking wins. And
for sure,
they're going to have a chance to get at least a couple decent wins in this tournament. And that's always exciting, I think.
Definitely. I mean, Nevada would be a great win for them. They'd be Washington, who's a good team. And they're 9-1. The only team they lost to is Drake, and Drake's not a bad team. So it's just exciting as a TCU fan, where we finally get to see some decent competition in the non-conference. And, these games are going to be back-to-back-to-back days. So it's going to be fun to just to watch them play over the holidays, and be able to have an opportunity to have some nice work, get better chemistry with the guys, all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I believe the championship would be Christmas Eve, which would be cool.
Yeah, that would be fun.
If it's 4 p.m. Christmas Eve Hawaii time, what does that – I wonder what
God,
that
– I
is
don't
that,
know. Is 5 hours? I'm bad at that.
Well, let me look. Hold on. 4 p.m. Hawaii time would be – 8 p.m. So I guess not too late, but that would be cool. Get to watch them on Christmas Eve. But obviously they're going to have to beat some good teams to get there. You would think, at least. So
outside of tomorrow too, and the whole college basketball realm, I mean, that's really going to be the only games of importance, from Thursday on. So just be locked on that tournament, sneak some looks in at the holiday parties if you need it. But I'm definitely going to be checking out these games. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then before we go, just looking forward a little bit more, we won't record. I guess we'll record sometime next week. But after this tournament, they get one home game against Texas A&M Commerce, and then it is,
and then we're ready.
And then it's showtime. Saturday the 6th, you go on the road to Lawrence. You play Kansas, and then you come back home. You play Oklahoma and Houston, which I'll be at both those games. That'll be fun. But it gets serious. It's getting real right now. And
definitely.
So as many of these decent teams that you can play, which this tournament, gives you some of those opportunities, is perfect. And it's about to get real, and it's about to get really fun. So,
yeah. I mean, it's the last opportunity for them in the non-conference. So, I mean, you got to give it everything you got. You can't sleep on any of these teams. And they should win the tournament. So if you go through the non-conference only having one loss, and that's to Clemson, again, looking way ahead into it. But that would be a very successful non-conference and something you can be proud of.
Yeah, I agree. All right, you have anything else?
I thought good episode. Excited to watch these games tomorrow, and excited to watch the Diamond Head. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, very fun. Well, as always, thank you for joining us here at the Frog Fever Killer Frogs Basketball Podcast. This was, I think, episode 7. We'll be back next week to talk about, I guess, the Diamond Head Classic, which will be a lot of fun to dissect.
Hopefully we can
talk about
win.
Some exciting things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll have something fun to talk about. But a lot of good basketball coming up. Big 12 play is coming up. So stick around. Keep coming back and listening. I'm Davis Wilson. As always, Nick Germani is my co-host. And thanks for joining. We will see you next week.
Thank you, guys. It's about to get real.